It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Rare moment of candor right there.
You don't say.
Right there on the mic. What happened? What happened to me? I can appreciate it. Yeah. It's 10,000 shows. I mean, every once in a while you just snap.
I'm almost positive that was in the midst of a Sabres conversation. It was just absolutely.
Let me see the pie chart on what we were probably talking
annihilating
about.
Annihilating my existence slowly but surely.
What were we probably talking about when Bulldog's like, why am I doing this?
Why did I choose this as a career path? Yeah.
With us now on the Western Hotline is Matt Larkin at M. Larkin Hockey. Daily Faceoff's been on the show several times over the years. Matt, I think it would be impossible for any hockey fan not to be enjoying these playoffs. All right, if your team lost, okay. I mean, I'm not saying like Leafs fans have to be thrilled right now. But these playoffs have been great. Drama, big names, all of it, comebacks.
There you go. Yep.
Right, Matt? I mean, has it not been a great year for the playoffs?
It absolutely has. There's been nonstop drama, especially in the first round. We had the back-to-back game sevens on the Saturday and Sunday to end the round with the unbelievable comebacks by Dallas and Winnipeg. And to me, you could argue that Dallas is at the epicenter of the maximum entertainment in these playoffs. They did it again in game one against Edmonton, scoring three power play goals in a row, coming back from that big deficit. And I think a team with that much depth and talent, they have the ability to just flick a switch. And the fun part is, so does Edmonton, the Oilers as well. They have their backs to the wall against the LA Kings. They push back as well. So to me, that series in particular, I think is just going to be nonstop entertainment.
Who is the best team left for you? Is it Florida? I mean, I'm not trying to answer the question for myself here, but Florida is the defending champ, so they deserve some respect, of course.
I think it is. They just have everything. If they're the champions, they have a goaltender who's proven in collections now. There's three or more goals in the playoffs. We've only barely started the third round. That, to me, is unbelievable. Their third line has been absolutely dominant with Anton Lundell between Marchand and Etu Lestiräinen. And they have the high-end talent as well, right? Your Alexander Barkov, your Sam Reinhardt. Those two are two of the best defensive forwards in the game. They just have everything. They're so physical. They're the meanest team in the NHL. There's really no weakness on that team. So, yes, I do think they are the best team remaining in the playoffs.
Yeah, I feel like they can play almost any way you want. Like, I know how they want to play, and that's just, you know, punish you with the forecheck. But I feel like even if a game opens up and you get a pocket within a game that is sort of up and down, they have the guys that can do that for them, too. It's not necessarily their best version of themselves, but if need be, like, they can call on it.
That's right. They can win it. I think unexpected coming from their blue line here in Toronto, just seeing what Seth Jones did in that series. He had a couple moments where his super high-end skating really played a role, just jumping in the rush. Their defensemen, I think, all playoffs have been unbelievable at pinching at the right times, and they have this ability to just hem their opponents in for what feels like, I'm sure for the opponents, hours at a time in their own zone.
Oh, God, Matt, that opening 10 minutes or so of Game 7 in Toronto on Sunday night, I mean, how often have you heard, you probably have written it, you know, or tweeted it during a game, got to survive 10 minutes on the road, got to survive 10 minutes on the road. It's pretty rare when you think that about a home team, but that's how that looked. I mean, they just could not get out of there.
Yeah, I've honestly never seen anything quite like that. Game 7, you're in your own building. It should be the other team trying to survive. And I think the shot attempts were like, the stats vary, but it was something along the lines of 22-0 for Florida. And the Leafs in that opening, they look like, or you could, let's give credit to Florida. Florida made them look like a team that was playing in the fifth overtime period. Like they had nothing left in their legs. And I thought, we're only 5 minutes into this game. What on earth is happening here? And yes, it was a case of the Leafs soiling their sheets, of course. We know their history, but I think also you have to give some credit to Florida just for being that dominant.
We'll get to the Leafs here. The news earlier today, as we speak, you know, very recent, that Brendan Shanahan will not be back. I want to talk about that here in a minute. You mentioned Seth Jones, though, in that seventh game. He's not always been the numbers favorite guy. Like, Jones has been somebody who's a super high draft pick, but has been panned at times. But there were a couple of plays in that second period. The snipe for the first goal, and I love the read he made. Was it the 3-0 goal, or maybe even the one that was disallowed that he scored when he crashed into the goalie? I think it was the 3-0 goal where he read the play at the neutral zone. I was showing it to my kids. Like, here, you don't expect to have anything here, but watch what this guy does. The puck, the momentum's on their side. The puck is down. They're owning this game. He jumps up. And that's the play where it might have been offside, but he lets the puck slide into the zone without touching it.
Right.
Just brilliant stuff from him. And that was really Florida in those two games in Toronto. Just almost shocking, Matt, how dominant they were.
It really is, especially when you look at the score in both those games combined, 12-2. And I tweeted this, I joked about it, but it really wasn't a joke. I said, if you took the San Jose Sharks, the last place team in the entire NHL, and said, hey, we want you to play two playoff games for fun against the Florida Panthers, would San Jose be outscored 12-2? I don't think so. You couldn't do that again if you tried. And to me, that also, it does speak to whatever the mental block is with the Leafs, and there's just this anxiety that seems to kick in. It's, yes, Florida being a dominant team, but when the score is that lopsided, it's almost unexplainable. And it's funny, you know, Craig Berube, to me, having seen him up close a lot this season, he's a coach that usually has the answers. He's usually very calm, but after 5-7, it's the only time all season that I saw him kind of just not knowing what to say. He could not understand himself why it happened.
Right, yeah, I think you just said it's mental. And you know, no kidding, right? I mean, news flash. Matt Larkin, Daily Faceoff, our guest here on the West Hur Hotline. So Mike mentions it here. Brendan Shanahan officially out. I don't think that's a surprise. As soon as they maybe agreed to let the Islanders talk to him, it probably seemed like the road was getting paved for him to be out. And I guess, you know, conveniently here, Matt, you've got contracts up that, you know, kind of force the end of the era of this core group. But I think maybe with the way those two home games went, sandwiched around a very good road effort in Game 6 to even the series, maybe would have forced their hand anyway, but now it's almost like they have no choice, right? I mean, maybe they'll want to keep Tavares and he wants to stay. We'll see about a discounted rate there or something. But, boy, Marner's got to be following Shanahan right out of town, I would think.
Yeah, I do think the civic manner in which they lost really played a role. You know, if they had lost in double overtime Game 7, hard-fought, maybe the perception would be different. You're against the defending champions and you've made progress. But to me, I think the way it went out, it really undid a lot of that. And yeah, with Shanahan, I think it was easy because the contract's up. And, you know, he deserves credit for bringing the franchise, which really was a laughingstock, I think, 11 years ago. He brought the franchise back to respectability. He installed Lou Lamoriello. He changed, I think, the team culture, even just the way the games are presented in the arena and things like taking the honored numbers and making them retired numbers. He had a lot of little touches like that during his tenure that made the Leafs relevant again. And we can say, obviously, they have the longest active playoff streak in the league now in 9 years. So they have been relevant for a long time. He can hang his hat on that. But at the same time, you could also argue that he was part of the coddling of the Stars and refusing to break up that core for too long when the results weren't there. The results were consistently just so similar year after year. So I do think it was time for a change. And, you know, being in the pressure cooker for him, maybe he wanted to change too. It's fair to think of it from both sides. As for Marner, it's going to be so interesting on both sides this offseason because Marner, you know, he's someone who I think bears the brunt of the pressure more than most in this market, and it's affected his family. And, you know, there's been talk of off-ice incidents involving fans, all that kind of stuff that may or may not have finally broken him. But at the same time, it's just, it's looking at the free agent market, it's dangerous for the Leafs because there is no player close to his caliber. And he's a big reason why you're in it every year, right? Because Marner plays 21, 22 minutes a night. He kills penalties. He plays the power play. He's elite defensively too. 102 points this year. He does so many things well. Last 5 years, he's seventh in the NHL in scoring. So that's very difficult to replace. And basically a decision that the Leafs are going to have to kind of work their way through is, are we okay chasing something in the short term? So whether it's a Brad Marchand, a Sam Bennett, and understanding that we might not be relevant for as long now if we walk away from Mitch Marner, because it is going to affect, I think, the long-term trajectory. And maybe that's okay, but you have to change something because you can't keep doing the same thing over and over. But I think it does need to be said. They're not going to be a better team long term if they lose Martin.
Right. The bad blood with him and the fan base, does that trace back to the first contract extension? Because if I recall correctly, like he kind of went hard there, and fans, in my experience, like talking about football here in our market, Matt, fans are generally pretty unforgiving when a guy tries to get all theirs.
Yeah, I do think it stems from that negotiation. It just stems from the perception that his dad kind of tends to meddle with the media, with negotiations as well. And I think it also, in a less tangible way, it stems from, I want to say, in-game body language. Just someone who seems to disappear and lose the visible fight in his game during crucial moments, right? So you could argue, hey, it's not like Marner has to be the elite goal scorer all the time. He's a playmaker. But when you are a 102-point scorer and in games 6 and 7 of playoff series, last 20 games that he's played in 5, 6, 7, 0 goals and 7 points. There's just no defending that. He disappears in big games, and I think the fan base is frustrated. If you look at in Toronto, the players in recent generations that are kind of remembered and beloved, Wendell Clark, Darcy Tucker, Gary Roberts, what do those guys have in common? They fought hard, right? They never gave up, and they had sort of that fighting spirit, even if the team didn't go all the way. So I think the fan base just wants to see more of that fight.
You know, Matt, Marner is somebody that Sabres fans, like, we're humbled, to say the least, at this point. You know, you got to sort of be careful. Find out who's listening when you're talking. So you don't want to sound like you're just oblivious to the history of the team and everything. But we do talk about Marner. And part of it, I think, is like, well, he's not far away. He doesn't really have to move his stuff too far. You know, maybe. But, man, if no matter however you want to explain away these performances in seventh games and in the playoffs, if I'm a guy like that, where really all I have left to prove in this league is to win and to kind of change the narrative on the postseason, Buffalo would be the last team on my mind for that. Like, I already have a certain reputation. Then I go there, it looks like I want to hide from the playoffs. So, I mean, maybe that's not entirely fair to the Sabres, but I think he's somebody that in a vacuum, this franchise should be in on. But I don't know. I'd like to hear that maybe they could get that off the ground. Because if I'm the player, I would want to pick a team where I think I'm walking into a situation where I'm already sort of like getting a jump on postseason success, if you can actually know that.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch-22 when you're perceived to be a possible $14 million player, because a lot of the teams that are elite or knocking on the door of Stanley Cups can't afford to add a $14 million player to their cap, right? So
yeah.
I feel like just based on his price point, the majority of the realistic suitors are going to be teams that are lower in the standings. It could be Chicago. It could be Buffalo. I think for the Sabres, absolutely you have to kick the tires, because we know Marner and John Tavares too, by the way, two players that are top six forwards who are still known for being, you know, having very close ties to their community. That could be kind of a consolation to go to Buffalo. I think both players at different price points could help Buffalo, because I think the Sabres, they genuinely need another top six forward. But again, so if you're Marner and you still want to win a cup, and if it's not Toronto, what teams out there are going to have the cap space to afford you? Maybe Boston Bruins could be one you could look at. I think they have a sneaky amount of cap space because they jettisoned so many pieces. So they, to me, would be a sleeper. Carolina Hurricanes, I think, are going to be very dangerous. Obviously, they didn't successfully re-sign Mikko Rantanen. They're going to have some money to play with as well. So those are two teams that are, I think, in the more competitive tier that you could look at if you're Mitch Marner.
Matt, not that it is super important to clarify this at this point in time, but how did, you mentioned Rantanen, and that tripped a wire for me. How did the information that there was a trade lined up between Toronto and Carolina for Rantanen, and that Marner killed it with his no trade, which is obviously within his rights, he negotiated that, or his agent did, or his dad did, whatever. He had it, he used it. That's the kind of thing that a fan base will be very loath to forgive as well. How did that information get out exactly? Do you know?
I can't confirm where exactly the leak came from. I can make some inferences on which parties would have benefited from leaking that out. Once it happened, I think a lot of people could make that guess. But to me, the moment it happened, I considered a big blunder for the loser fans. If you were going to ask him, it's like you have to think, okay, If you're Brad Treliving and Brandon Shanahan, that scenario, and you're saying, should we go to Mitch and ask him to waive it? Do you think he's going to? He's not going to. He's a Toronto guy. He's trying to fulfill his dream. So the moment you ask him, you can't unring that bell. Now he knows you tried to get rid of him, and that could affect the relationship forever. So to me, it was risky even to consider the trade if it wasn't guaranteed to be done. And I think that caused damage that might go down as irreparable, depending on if Martiner leaves.
And I don't think you can ever blame the player when they negotiate a no-trade clause and choose to exercise it. And was his wife pregnant at the time, too?
She just gave birth a couple weeks ago.
Okay,
correct?
Yeah, that's tough to blame the player. And the way the whole media thing works, you can sort of people inside use different ways of making maybe the other party look bad. And like you said, I mean, that could be something where you just don't easily recover from that. You're just saying once he finds out what the Leafs are thinking of doing, but it can maybe escalate from there. Well, at the risk of just sort of being redundant here, Matt, what kind of hope might you have for the Sabres, in the offseason? We've had everything here. And the latest talk, not just Marner, but some sort of senior advisor, I think the Sabres are open to that. It sounds like they are, but it's still a little bit late in the game. I mean, other teams have done a lot so far. I don't know what to really think of that, but would you be someone to think that that's necessary for them, or what else?
I do wonder, and I don't want to be too rude to Kevin Adams, but I do sometimes get a sense that he's throwing his hands up, right? Especially when he gave the presser earlier this year, lamenting the lack of palm trees. I don't think that's a good look. It doesn't inspire a lot of confidence when your GM is basically saying, I cannot bring in free agents. People don't want to come here. I still find that hard to believe. I think you can sell a player on a market. It's not like Buffalo is a market that doesn't care about hockey. A lot of players do want a market where the fans genuinely care, and that should be a selling point. So I don't fully buy this notion that you cannot bring players to Buffalo. It just has to be a scenario that tells prospective free agents, hey, we might be able to win here. So if you are able to install sort of a bigger name, a more senior name above Kevin Adams, maybe that would help just give the impression that the franchise is less rudderless, for lack of a better term, right? So, but I agree that we're getting, the draft is getting closer. We're almost about a month away from the draft. I think if you're going to install that position, someone in that position, you need to do it pretty soon. And I feel like maybe it would have happened by now. But overall, in terms of just outlook for the Sabres, it's tough. They're such a confounding team, right? 14 years now. It's not like they need to amass any more prospects. They have so many. And I do think they have to consider at this point repeating what they did with the Ryan McLeod trade last year. Yes, Sabres fans who have been mad at me all year, I did criticize the trade because I think that Matt Savoy is going to be a very good player. But in principle, obviously, Ryan McLeod helped in the short term, right? It was a good trade. He has exceeded my expectations. So I get the rationale behind the trade in terms of, okay, you can only have so many Zach Bensons and Jack Quinns and Isaac Roses and Yuri Kulich. You have to trade some of those guys for help now. It's time. So I do think that needs to be the plan, and I think they have to get deeper on defense as well. Goaltending, it's tough. It's voodoo. You have Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who looks great 1 year. This year, he regresses. Devon Levi continues to show a lot of potential in the AHL. Can he do it in the NHL? They have the goalies on paper. So I think it's, to me, more about finding another top six forward and deepening your decor, and maybe it finally clicks. But I don't blame anyone who's frustrated in your market just thinking, what else can we possibly do at this point? Because it seems like there's often the talent there on paper.
Yeah, we've said it all over these years. Do you remember the Sabres in the playoffs, Matt? I mean, you're a younger guy than we are, but maybe not so young that you don't remember it.
Oh, I do. I'm in my 40s, so yes, I remember. I remember all the way back to the Odd and Alexander McGillie scoring 76. So that was my childhood version of the Sabres.
Yeah.
Those guys, Pat LaFontaine, and that was my, when I was 10 years old, those were my Sabres.
Yeah.
So don't worry, I've seen a lot of these runs.
Hey, before we wrap this up, we haven't talked about the West at all. Does the entirety of Canada now get behind Connor McDavid and the Oilers, or is that not how it works?
I think maybe if Edmonton didn't have a generationally magical player, that would not be true. But I think people just want to see greatness enough, maybe not in Calgary, but every other market in Canada. I think they do adopt the Oilers for the rest of the run. They want to see McDavid rewarded for his greatness, not just him winning Conn Smythe trophies in a losing cause because he's still that good. And, we have the curse here. It's been 1993 since a Canadian team won a cup, right? So we're at 31 years right now. So I think maybe people want to see that, or 32 years. So people want to see that curse ended.
the same year as McGillney's 76 goals, but then he gets hurt in the second round and Montreal sweeps with 4-1 goal wins. And I don't know, that wasn't my favorite. 93 Habs were not my favorite. How about McDavid? It wasn't a goal, but the play in the first period where he intercepts the pass in front of his net and goes and gets that shot on. Hyman has the rebound. I think goalie's lucky there. It's like hits the inside of his arm and then off like his side and out. Man, that was almost every game he gives you something like that, McDavid. So,
well, you can make a highlight reel tape of all the plays that don't result in goals.
I know.
He makes, you know, 15 of those, oh my God, gasping moments every game. And to me, he is, you know, if you don't, if you remove comparison era to era, I'm still obviously going to be a Gretzky stan forever. But in terms of just pure talent, I think he is the deadliest player ever with the puck on his stick. You know, Pavel Bure maybe was that player for me for a long time, but there are things McDavid can do at just such high speeds that no player has ever been able to do.
Right. The speed and the size, and like there's a little bit of so many great players from the past that are in him. You know, like Lindros was big like that. He's bigger even than McDavid, but did not have the hands and the skill. Just he's a little bit of so many guys over the years. Really special. And unlike in other sports, that play can amount to, you know, just a face-off.
Right. You know,
basketball, it's on SportsCenter. Every other sport, like, it counts for something. Hockey is just an amazing highlight. Anyway, Matt, thank you for today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the playoffs. Maybe we'll talk again this offseason.
Thanks so much, guys. You enjoy it, too.
Thank you. Matt Larkin from Daily Faceoff. During the season, I'm on that site almost every day. If for no other reason than to check tonight's starting goalies or that night's starting goalies, because they have that usually ahead of, like in fantasy, they'll be ahead of Yahoo and ahead of others for like who is expected to start in goal tonight. All right, we're talking first hour historical comps for Josh Allen, 803-0550. I wrote down from our names and callers 10 different names, and it didn't hear anybody twice.
Pretty good job by everyone.
Maybe it's not easy. Maybe there's not an obvious answer for Allen historically. Lines are open for your calls. We're free until 6 when Andrew Filippone joins the show. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here, WGR.
Halliburton will take it. The back pedal, a three for the win. And he got it!
I got to make sure he got all the way behind the line.
That's right.
He certainly got it off in plenty of time.
Oh, I think that's a two.
That is a two. You're right.
I think that's going to be a two.
That only ties the game. That ties the game.
Still. A little preemptive choke sign there.
Still. 14 down under 3 minutes.
Yeah.
The NBA playoffs have been great, too. Tyrese Halliburton. What a shot, I guess.
Right.
Kind of a brick.
Didn't see it, yeah. It went off the rim and up in the air and hung there for a while, and Knick fans were holding their breaths, and then it went through.
I bet there's a shot, like a basketball movie, a basketball scene in a movie like that, where they thought, let's do that for the dramatic effect. Let's have it bounce off the rim and just go as high up as is humanly possible, and we'll slow the shot down, and the ball will be in the air for like 10 seconds, and then it falls. There's got to be – I'm not saying it would be a good movie.
No.
But that would have happened in a movie. It would have been for the win, though,
in the movie. Right, in the movie, sure. How does Joey Chitwood's
Jimmy,
Joey Chitwood was a stunt car driver that used to perform at the Erie County Fair. How did hit that shot go in? I don't remember. Did it rattle around, or did he just drain it?
I think he just buried it.
Swished it.
I haven't seen that movie, Hoosiers, in a long time. I think he just buried it.
Jimmy Chitwood. Okay, get it right.
I'll make it.
Yeah.
Right? In the huddle.
Yeah.
After the players all give Norman Dale the dirty looks, like, really? He's a decoy? Jimmy? You would never. What do you mean? What?
Right. What are we doing here?
What?
Yep.
I'll make it. I think he has to make. I think with that setup, He has to swish it.
Just drain it.
He can't do this. He can't do this nonsense from last night where it bricks the back rim and then just
I know it definitely didn't do that. I don't remember that ball suspended in the air, but you know it could have hit like you know the backboard and the front of the rim and rattled around a little. But a swish is the most likely.
I think it's
scenario.
A swish. Yeah. I don't know for sure. I think it's a swish. I think it should have been. Have we all seen Hoosiers? It's 40 years ago.
I'm going to say probably not.
It's longer ago. The movie is older than when it was made, like when it was set.
Right.
It would have been 30 to 35 years in the past where the movie is set, 50s. And now it's 40 years ago, 39, 40 years ago, Hoosiers. It's good. It's overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't want to put my name on that. You feel free. You're obviously
overrated.
I haven't seen it in long enough but I remember really liking the movie.
It's no The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh when it comes to a basketball movie. I mean, there's it's not a lower tier than that. There's no doubt about that. It's good.
I've never seen this Fish That Saved Pittsburgh movie.
Dr. J?
Yeah.
You got to see it.
Never saw it.
There's a great basketball
somehow
movie.
Somehow I've managed to make it this far.
Well,
so I don't know about God. God,
what you want,
see it,
what you do in life, what you do in life is you're happy with what you have,
right.
And what you haven't done, you don't want to be sad about that. So you're just like, you know, I've done a lot. I'm happy with my life, even though I haven't seen The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh.
Somehow I
doesn't
persevered.
Feel like a void.
Yeah,
doesn't really feel like I've missed out, and I still have time. It's the kind of thing you could still do. It's not exactly like going to the Great Wall of China or something where you feel like you'll never have a chance to do that.
No, I could just go home tonight and before the hockey game starts, tap into any one of my 17,000 streaming services that I'm paying $6.99 a month for, and yeah.
You think it's on one of them?
Find my way to it.
It might be too obscure
Yeah.
I doubt it's on Netflix or anything. You get Jonathan Winters.
Yeah.
You love Jonathan Winters.
Maybe I can. I do.
Yes, everybody does.
Maybe I can find it on Acorn. My wife has an Acorn subscription.
What's Acorn?
It's some British, streaming.
Really?
British crime dramas mostly. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Acorn?
I'm not kidding. Yes, that's a thing. I just looked today. We talked about this yesterday, and you mentioned we see the ads for the apps that will tell you what you have and what you're paying. My Apple TV subscription actually does that. Like it houses all of that under one umbrella, and I can go in there and look. And I think about 6 months ago, I went in there and I went, Acorn, get out of here.
Acorn.
But it's back because my wife likes it.
Okay.
I'm going to stay out of the way on Acorn.
You got to see this movie. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page now. Jerry Tarkanian is in it. Kareem. Marv Albert.
None of these people are actors.
Bob Lanier. No, like real players.
Yeah. Acting like they're playing basketball.
That sounds a little loud. No, like really playing.
Yeah.
Not like the South Bend high school jokers. They might have been really playing. Here's Tom with us. Hello, Tom.
Hey, guys. Wanted to call in about your Josh Allen question. I like the question.
Good.
Had a name in mind. This is kind of just based off my football watch. I've been a Bills fan only 20 years or so. But I was kind of thinking Donovan McNabb. McNabb drafted in 99. Then he went to those four consecutive NFC Championship games in 2001, 2004, I want to say it was.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they kind of had the same trajectory. Josh kind of had the instant success within 2 to 3 years. He's only been to 2 NFC Championships, but it feels like 4 because we're always contenders. But I just feel like their careers have been kind of the same to this point, just based on where they've been. The AFC and NFC championships and them contending every year for a Super Bowl. So, yeah, he's kind of the first name I thought.
I think that's really good. I think that's really good, and I hadn't thought of McNabb. But, again, thank you, Tom. You're doing it through the team lens, and that is what is unique to quarterback. If we talked about running back,
be about yards and touchdowns.
It would be about style.
Right.
You know, this guy would run over you, this guy would run around you. But it would never even – Barry Sanders not getting to a Super Bowl is never mentioned. Like, it's just not – it's not held against him in the slightest. But quarterback, so many of these comparisons are about how the teams did. And I'm not saying that's wrong. That's kind of what quarterback is. So McNabb is really close. I like how he said it. They haven't been to four AFC championships, but it seems like it. It does seem like it. You know, they could have been. Maybe should have been to three in 4 years or 5 years. So I like McNabb for this. I'm going to add him to the list. He has a nickname, but only one on Pro Football Reference. Only one.
Is it related to his Chunky Soup sponsorships?
It is not.
Okay.
Unless he did five different ad campaigns because it's five. His nickname is five.
His nickname is his number?
Yes.
I want this entire conversation stricken from the record.
Five.
Five is his nickname.
Mike is next. Hello, Mike.
Well, how are you guys doing today?
Great. Thank you. How are you?
Great. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Just wanted to call and comment about the whole basketball end of the movie. Ball hits off the rim, goes up in the air. Actually, Teen Wolf, Michael J. Fox, at the very end scene, he's a free throw to win the game, hits the front of the rim, and it goes up in the air for like 10 seconds. Crowd holds their breath. And I hate to bring up Teen Wolf, but 1985. No. But I had a call.
I love it.
I'm thrilled that you thought to bring up Teen Wolf.
Yeah. I love that it was your first call ever to the show, and we have this about Teen Wolf.
You want to squeeze in? You want to tell me directly? I need to see this movie because I don't think I've seen this movie. So maybe I can have a double header with the fish that. What is this thing? Other thing called
the fish that saved Pittsburgh.
That and Teen Wolf.
No,
I'll set up a big screen in the backyard. And we'll invite people over.
I think Mike, the caller, might agree. Teen Wolf is unwatchable.
No, are you kidding me? It should have won an Oscar.
Should have won an Oscar is so funny. That's good. Especially if you mean it. That's good, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Should have won an Oscar. Well, I thought, didn't he say he was embarrassed to mention Teen Wolf? Like, sorry to mention Teen Wolf, but I got the sense he didn't really like the movie or respect it. And then he pushes back. Smart. That was a good play by Mike. I had him read wrong. It's somebody that didn't respect Teen Wolf.
It's possible I've seen some of these things and I've just forgotten. I mean, I forget a lot of stuff.
Teen Wolf.
There's only so much room in here, you know. It's just, some stuff slips away. But I don't think I ever saw Teen Wolf.
You'd like the fish to save Pittsburgh. It's a different era, too. It's not like 80s. I mean, you're not going to see Molly Ringwald in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. It's not a John Hughes movie.
All right.
It's not one of these, you know, sappy teenage 80s rom-coms. It's like a cool basketball movie with lots of famous people in it and Harry Shearer.
Please tell me Harry Shearer is like the trainer or something.
I don't know. He's in it.
He's not in shorts trying to guard Dr. J, is he?
Let's hope. I want to go back and check.
It seems like that would be a tough assignment.
It's a tough assignment. That would be a tough assignment.
Coach, what are we doing here?
Dr. J,
he's eating Shearer alive.
So we're back here in 1979.
Hit someone else on Dr. J. Not the bass player from Spinal Tap.
Get
him out of here.
Can we get Greg to do like a basketball version of the Serial All-Stars and accept that it's like basketball legends and actors from the 70s and 80s? Oh, dear God. Julius Erving is going off against Lonnie Anderson. That would be funny. I'm not sure she's in the Fish to Save Pittsburgh. Speaking of Pittsburgh, Andrew Filippone will join us at 6 today. Let's take another call. Here is Randy. Hi, Randy.
Gentlemen, speaking of John Hughes movies, I just wanted to confirm, or if you could dispel, that the rumor of you two guest appearing in the new Hallmark movie with William Shatner in the opening scene, if that's true or not. Just curious.
I'm not in it. I know that.
There's no. I'm sorry. I've not heard this rumor. I did apply, and I did not get a part.
Gotcha. Well, that is a shame, and maybe things will change, Bulldog. But back on the Josh Allen situation, there, the conversation.
Yes.
I love the point you guys made about Brett Favre. Absolutely true. Early on in his career, and then as time went on, I started to think about it. You know, a kid from a small school, big arm, athletic. Who does this remind me of? Oh, man, what about that guy from Tulane, J.P. Lossman? You know, so that's where my head went for a second. But I think after the perfect game, I'll never forget, I went on to NBC Boston Sports, And Tom Curran said it best. He runs better than Mahomes. He runs better than Rodgers. He runs better than Burrow, but he throws better than Lamar. There's nobody like him. Absolute unicorn. I think quarterbacks, if there's anyone ever like him ever again in our lifetime, you compare it to him. He's his own entity. He's one and one. There's nobody to compare him to. There he is.
All right. Well, how it's going to be, not that any of that is wrong. I mean, I'm not going to tell you it is, but how it's going to be is based on how the Bills do. What happens in the playoffs over the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, if it's more than 10, that's incredible. It's been 7.
Right.
They've made the playoffs 6 years in a row. They've won the division 5 years in a row. Right now, he and they are in a class of teams that are known for losing. They're known for being good or great even, but not getting to the top. And you know, we've lived it with the Kelly teams. That's kind of what that was. Allen is better than Kelly. I mean, I think that's kind of easy. And I loved Kelly and those teams, but I think that's kind of easy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what that discourse has always been since they broke up, since they retired. That's always been.
They didn't get there. Well, yeah. I mean, they got there. They didn't win it. Yeah.
I mean, they could have been like the Lions or some team that did nothing. So they did way more than that. But that's just that's how it goes. And I think that's also how it goes here. And the difference in competition in the AFC here versus then is dramatic. And, you know, the Bills are a victim of that. Not to say that they're entirely without fault, but they're a victim of Mahomes and Burrow. And, you know, they've beaten Lamar Jackson.
He's there.
But he's a comp for Allen, too, because they're having the same career.
Right.
They're both incredible. You've never seen anything like them before, MVP players, but they haven't gotten there yet, and they'll be remembered largely the same if that doesn't change, I think. You had to see them, but they're not going to, you know, have, other than on Hallmark, movies made about them. They're not going to have, you don't have John Facenda yet here happening with this team.
No.
You might have whoever Hallmark's narrator is, the voice of Hallmark, who's that going to be? Is that somebody, the Smuckers guy or somebody?
The late George Wendt. I don't know.
The Smuckers guy?
I don't know who that is.
I don't know if there is one, but anyway, you get the point. 803-0550, Josh Allen's career comp is whom? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR. Bandits game Saturday at 4:30 for the NLL title, one game for the ship. At home against Saskatchewan, sold out. So just under 48 hours from now is that one. Teams have split two very tight games so far in the best of three.
Right, 12-10 win and an 11-10 loss, I believe, for the Bandits.
Sounds pretty close.
Yes. And the 12-10 was like kind of a – they had to surge late, I think, to get game one.
So that is Saturday afternoon. Here is Jake next. Hi, Jake.
Hey, there's been a lot of comparisons that don't fit. Like I hear Steve Young and Johnny Unitas and stuff like that. These elusive quarterbacks that can throw as well. But Josh Allen is a prolific power running quarterback, and I don't think there's another one like him in NFL history. The rest of the running quarterbacks that have been really successful have been elusive. I mean, he's second all time in QB rushing touchdowns. I guess the closest comparison you could make is like a young Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, that's the only one I could come up with.
Body type wise, I get it. I mean, Roethlisberger's, what was he, like 6'5", 240? That's close enough to Allen. He was never,
I got it.
He was never the runner. He extended plays. He was big. He was powerful, but he was not a dangerous runner. I don't feel like at all. And he won so early. I mean, he won in his second year, and then his fourth year, and then his back again in his sixth year, I think, Roethlisberger. So if you want to, you know, team results into it, like the Steve Young comparison worked for me. Stylistically, they were very different looking players. I don't disagree. But it took him a while to get over the hump.
But they're both dangerous runners.
Yeah.
That's what Roethlisberger, I think, lacks.
Yeah, I just don't think he was ever a real threat.
And Allen is dangerous.
Yeah, for sure.
And so was Young, and so was Randall Cunningham, you know, other guys over the years. Yeah. But, yeah, it's the – thanks, Jake. I think it's the combination of the style and then also, like, the team
– the waiting
path that the Bills are on, these other guys were on that, you know, there are a lot of comparisons just on that. Find a quarterback for a team that's been close for basically the quarterback's whole career. You'd find lots of those guys. And some of these names included, and some of them got there and some of them didn't. Moon didn't. Like, some of those guys never did get to a championship. But, yeah, of course, you're right, in terms of the size of the player, right on. 803-0550, who is your best or favorite comp for Josh Allen all time? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Lines are open for you. This is WGR.